This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton.
No member-elect, having received a majority of the votes cast, a speaker has not been elected.
That's Cheryl Johnson, clerk of the U.S. House of Representatives, after one of the 11 votes the House took over the past 3 days before voting to adjourn late on Thursday. A band of 20 right-wing lawmakers again blocked California Congressman Kevin McCarthy on Thursday from becoming Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives in an ongoing protest that he's not beholden enough to the conservative cause. The third day of balloting to pick a new leader of the 435-member lower chamber of Congress looked much like the first 2 days, with McCarthy, a 16-year lawmaker and the current House Republican leader, falling well short of the majority of 218 votes he needs to win the job. The United States will use pandemic-era restrictions to rapidly expel Cuban, Nicaraguan, and Haitian migrants caught illegally crossing the U.S.-Mexico border. This according to President Biden on Thursday as he seeks to gain control of migration. Biden is expected to allow up to 30,000 people from those three countries plus Venezuela to enter the country by air each month. But Biden said those who help to benefit from that plan must follow the rules.
If you're trying to leave Cuba, Nicaragua, or Haiti, you have or have agreed to begin a journey to America, do not just show up at the border. Stay where you are and apply legally from there. Starting today, if you don't apply through the legal process, you will not be eligible for this new parole program.
Biden made those comments in Washington on Thursday. From Washington, you're listening to VOA News, and you can find more on this story at our website, voanews.com. The Coast Guard of the U.S. has removed more than 300 Cuban migrants from a remote island national park off the Florida coast. Homeland Security officials said 337 migrants were taken Thursday by Coast Guard Cutter from Dry Tortugas National Park on a 70-mile trip to Key West, where they'll be processed. They're among more than 700 migrants, mostly Cubans, who arrived in Florida by boats over the New Year's weekend. More than 4,400 Cubans and Haitians have arrived in Florida since August. The U.S. Census Bureau says more than 1% of the adult population in the United States was displaced by natural disasters in the past year. APZ Donahue has more.
That's more than 3 million people. The Household Pulse survey says they were forced out of their homes by hurricanes, floods, fires, tornadoes, or other disasters. Nearly 1 million people were impacted in Florida. The state was hit hard by Hurricanes Ian and Nicole in the fall. The survey says more than a third were out of their homes for less than a week. About 1 in 6 never returned to their homes. The Census Bureau says invitations were sent to more than 1 million households to take part in the experimental survey and collected more than 70,000 responses. I'm Ed Donahue.
Known for a history that includes civil rights activism and music, Nashville's Fisk University has made a giant leap for a historically black college and university in the United States, women's gymnastics. AP correspondent Norman Hall.
Fisk University, a private school with 1,000 students, is the first historically black school to take part in an NCAA women's gymnastics meet. Coach Kareen Tarver admits she knew it would be tough to recruit from the ground up.
I didn't know how. I mean, I kind of was like, there's no way I'm going to get 15 girls. I knew I could get athletes. I just didn't think I was going to be able to get this many.
The squad currently trains in an off-campus gym. Coach Tarver says she hopes fans and the athletes don't expect to knock off powerhouses competing this week in Las Vegas. I'm Norman Hall.
Venezuela's opposition National Assembly on Thursday appointed 3 exiled lawmakers to direct it and create a commission to control foreign assets, including oil refiner Citgo Petroleum, as the outgoing leader Juan Guaido bid farewell and thanked his supporters. The assembly voted last week to remove Guaido as its interim president. The United States and other governments had backed Guaido after deeming the 2018 re-election of President Nicolas Maduro as fraudulent. And the corruption scandal at the European Parliament deepened this week as officials said they would seek to lift immunity on 2 more lawmakers accused of taking bribes from Qatar. More on this and all the stories we're covering at our website, voanews.com. I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Friday, January 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, China stands behind its handling of a major COVID outbreak.
Facts have proved that China has always maintained close communications with the World Health Organization and shared the relevant information and data in a timely manner.
In announcing new U.S. migration programs, President Biden urges migrants to follow the rules.
This new process is orderly, it's safe, and it's humane, and it works.
And Russia's president announces a 36-hour ceasefire in Ukraine. We'll have these stories and more next. China defended on Thursday its handling of its raging COVID-19 outbreak after U.S. President Joe Biden voiced concern and the World Health Organization said Beijing was underreporting virus deaths. Olivia Chan of Reuters reports.
China defended its handling of its raging COVID-19 outbreak on Thursday, a day after U.S. President Joe Biden voiced concern and the World Health Organization said Beijing was underreporting virus deaths. China's foreign ministry spokesperson Mao Ning said the country's epidemic situation is controllable.
Facts have proved that China has always maintained close communications with the World Health Organization and shared the relevant information and data in a timely manner.
With one of the lowest official COVID death tolls in the world, China has been routinely accused of underreporting for political reasons. In December last year, the WHO said it had received no data from China on new COVID hospitalizations since Beijing lifted its zero COVID policy. It prompted some health experts to question whether it might be hiding information on the extent of its outbreak. In the WHO's latest weekly report, figures on Thursday show a nearly 50% increase of new COVID-19 hospitalization in the week to January 1st. And 218,019 new weekly COVID cases as of January 1st, adding that gaps in data might be due to authorities simply struggling to tally cases. Mike Ryan, the WHO's emergencies director, said on Wednesday that Chinese officials were underrepresenting data on several fronts.
We believe that the current numbers being published from China underrepresent the true impact of the disease in terms of hospital admissions, in terms of ICU admissions, and particularly in terms of death.
Hours later, Biden also raised concern about China's handling of a COVID outbreak that is filling hospitals and overwhelming some funeral homes.
China's not been, I know they're very sensitive about when we suggest they haven't been that forthcoming.
The French health minister also voiced similar concerns. China's government has downplayed the severity of the situation in recent days as hundreds of mourners held memorial services for their loved ones at a crematorium in Shanghai on Thursday. And in Hong Kong, residents rushed to get vaccinated as China prepares to reopen the border with its special administrative region on Sunday for the first time in 3 years. Travelers will then also be welcomed from around the world without the need to quarantine. But the United States and more than a dozen other countries have now imposed restrictions on those arriving from China.
That's Olivia Chan reporting of Reuters. President Biden announced stricter procedures and new migration programs on Thursday as he prepares to visit the U.S.-Mexico border this weekend. Biden's message to migrants, don't just show up at the border.
This new process is orderly, it's safe, and it's humane, and it works. Since we created the new program, the number of Venezuelans trying to enter America without going through a legal process has dropped dramatically from about 1,100 per day to less than 250 per day on average. That's several hundred people on average every single day who are not crossing into America illegally.
Biden is expanding a program to accept up to 30,000 migrants a month from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. He also plans to expel migrants from those countries who do not follow U.S. laws. The U.S. has been dealing with a surge of migrants at its southern border for years. For a third straight day, the U.S. Congress still has no House Speaker and cannot conduct any business. There were more failed votes on Thursday to make Kevin McCarthy speaker, but sources say a deal may be in the works to break the stalemate with Republican conservatives. The Kremlin on Thursday announced a 36-hour ceasefire in Ukraine to coincide with the Eastern Orthodox Christmas. Ukraine's leaders dismissed the move, calling it cynical posturing by an untrustworthy and ruthless enemy. President Vladimir Putin ordered the ceasefire from noon Friday until midnight Saturday. More than 20 million children in the Horn of Africa are suffering dire drought conditions, including many with severe acute malnutrition. UNICEF puts the number at 20.2 million. That's more than double the number 5 months ago. For more on the threat facing children in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia, I spoke with Lika van de Wiel, UNICEF Deputy Regional Director for Eastern and Southern Africa.
We saw a deterioration in the last 6 months, and right now we have around 20 million plus children facing threat of hunger, thirst, and other diseases because of the drought and the secondary impact that a long-lasting drought has had on those children in the Horn of Africa.
What is UNICEF doing in Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia to alleviate severe hunger and thirst there?
Yeah, we are doing a lot. Of course, more needs to be done, but we've been working in these countries for many decades. And we've had programs all along to ensure that those children were receiving basic services and health, and that they had enough food and water and clean water, schooling and learning. But because of the drought, we've seen many families uprooting themselves, looking for water, looking for more livelihoods because their livelihoods are destroyed. And our response, therefore, has to be adjusted to ensure that those uprooted families and children that face now hunger and more diseases are being catered for. So we do a lot of acute malnutrition treatment. So when children are really very malnourished, especially the youngest one, that's absolutely dangerous. We help them in getting ready to use therapeutic food. And they will then recover and outside the danger zone so they can go home and then survive on a normal diet. But of course, the normal diets are not normal in these types of droughts. So UNICEF is also helping with many UN partners and other partners to ensure that families have a decent diet.
You know, you say these kinds of droughts, this one seems like it's been going on for a long time, more than 6 months, right? So that's kind of unprecedented.
Yeah, this one has been absolutely very powerful and sad, because this is we're going to the sixth rainy season that might fail. So we're talking about the worst in 40 years. And this has been accumulating, because the first rainy season that doesn't work, of course, is still manageable. But we're going towards the sixth. So it gets harder and harder for those families and communities to be resilient.
And also the time that they've been uprooted, when you think about that, sometimes I would imagine it's permanent when these people are displaced for 6 months or more with their children. Do they often not come back to their homes?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. And there you can also see that, of course, such drought is not reversible anymore. I mean, there's environmental degradation. So if there's a real big drought and the crops are not working, and of course, the cattle can't be fed or there's no water, then it's not a possibility for those families to go back and create a new livelihood. And that is something that the climate crisis has shown us, that it's not so easy to bounce back, because once a drought has really settled in, and there's nothing to bounce back from, the environmental degradation is tremendous.
That was Lika van de Wiel, UNICEF Deputy Regional Director for Eastern and Southern Africa. She was speaking to me this week from Nairobi, Kenya. You're listening to VOA News. Former Pope Benedict XVI was laid to rest at the Vatican on Thursday in a funeral attended by thousands and led by Pope Francis. Lucy Fielder of Reuters has more.
Pope Francis presided at the funeral of former Pope Benedict on Thursday, giving an homily that compared his predecessor to Jesus before tens of thousands of mourners at St. Peter's Square.
Gracious Father, we commend to your mercy Pope Emeritus Benedict, whom you made successor of Peter and shepherd of the Church, a fearless preacher of your word and a faithful minister of the divine mysteries.
Benedict's death on Saturday ended an unusual decade of the former and present Pope living side by side in the Vatican. Benedict shocked the world by resigning nearly a decade ago, the first pope to do so in 600 years instead of reigning for life. But he remained a hero to Catholic conservatives. As pallbearers carried the coffin away, cries of Santo Subito, or Saint Now, arose from the crowds. People from all over the world, many from Benedict's native Germany, had arrived overnight to say farewell. Clergy, thousands of faithful, and just a handful of world leaders, because when Benedict died, he was no longer head of state. About 200,000 people filed past Benedict's body while he was lying in state until Wednesday evening. An account of Benedict's papacy and items including Vatican coins minted during his reign were tucked into the coffin. Written in Latin, the account says he fought with firmness against sexual abuse by clergy and the church. But some critics, including victims, have accused him of seeking to protect the church at all costs. Francis, who arrived in a wheelchair troubled by a bad knee, has made clear he wouldn't hesitate to step down one day if his health prevented him carrying out his duties. But Vatican officials doubted he could do this while Benedict was alive. Benedict will rest in the underground Vatican grottos at his own request.
That's Reuters correspondent Lucy Fielder. Some of the more than 70,000 Ethiopians who fled to Sudan during the two-year war in the Tigray region are hoping to soon go home. This as a November peace deal between Ethiopian federal forces and the Tigray People's Liberation Front appears to be holding. But some Tigrayan refugees are skeptical the peace will last, as Michael Atit reports from Rakuba refugee camp in Sudan.
61-year-old Tigrayan Tesfai Gabriel Mariam fled Ethiopia's civil war to Sudan's Rakuba refugee camp 2 years ago after his wife was killed in the fighting. He has since lived with his two grandchildren in a makeshift shelter. But the November peace deal between Ethiopia's federal government and Tigrayan authorities has raised hopes they may be able to soon return home. Tesfai says if peace is implemented and there is a stability in Ethiopia, they will go back. But he says he understands people are still being targeted. If there is a total peace, says Tesfai, they are ready to go home. But they say peace has come, he says, and then they come and kill our people again. Tesfai says that is why we can't believe them. Rights group says hundreds of thousands of Tigrayans were pushed out of their homes in what amounts to ethnic cleansing, a notion that Ethiopian authorities reject. Even if their safety was guaranteed, it is not clear what Tigrayan refugees like Tesfai would have left if they returned home. Tesfai worked as a grocer in Tigray's capital, Mekele, but says his shop was looted during the war. His story and fears are echoed by other Tigrayans living in Rakuba. Mlugar Sihar, a 58-year-old mother of four, also arrived at the camp 2 years ago. She says life here has been difficult and they are ready to go home to Tigray if there is peace. She says peace is good, but we are not sure if the agreement is going to be implemented. Muluk says they are happy that they have agreed to stop fighting and accept to work for peace. She says we want to live with our children in our homeland. The peace deal stated that foreign forces would withdraw from Ethiopia, the TPLF would disarm, and key services would be restored to Tigray. In December, Ethiopia restored some telecommunications power and flights to Tigray and allowed more humanitarian aid to enter the region. Witnesses in the Tigray region towns of Exum and Shire last week said Eritrean forces that fighting on the side of Ethiopia's federal forces withdrew though it was not clear if Eritrean troops had left Tigray completely. But 61-year-old Tigrayan refugee Birhan Hiro still fears the peace deal will not hold. She says services in Umbrakuba camp have worsened in recent months, but she still prefers staying in Sudan rather than going home and risk being killed. Birhan says, "We will only go back home when Ethiopia has a new prime minister. For now," she says, "I prefer staying here in the camp." We lost many of our relatives during this war, says Birhan, and that is why I'm not going back. The United Nations in October estimated 500,000 Ethiopians have died from conflict, hunger, disease, and lack of medical care during the war. The UN's refugee agency in Sudan was not immediately available for comment on when it would be safe for Tigrayans to return to Ethiopia. The Sudanese Humanitarian Commission, which is responsible for the country's refugee issues, did not respond to requests for comment. Michael Atid for VOA News, Umrakube Refugee Camp, Sudan.
The Mexican military has captured Ovidio Guzman, the son of drug kingpin El Chapo, or Joaquin Guzman. The younger Guzman is allegedly one of the country's top fentanyl traffickers. His detention comes days before President Biden is expected to visit Mexico and press for action against criminal groups that flood the U.S. with the deadly opioid. Spain says it has broken up a criminal gang that exploited undocumented migrants for work in agriculture. The AFP says police arrested 43 people in a southern province who belonged to a ring that charged illegal migrants over $3,000 for fake work contracts to regularize their status. Police say at least seven agricultural firms participated in the scheme. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. The annual conference of the Consumer Technology Association opened January 5th in Las Vegas. After an unusually low turnout last year due to COVID-19 and supply chain issues, the Consumer Electronics Show is back in full swing, as we hear from VOA's Julie Tabo.
The latest innovations in digital health, transportation, and the metaverse are just a few of the technological breakthroughs on display at the CES 2023 Consumer Electronics Show. This year's theme is technology helping to address the world's greatest challenges, says John Kelly, vice president and acting show director for CES. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
We've partnered with a UN-affiliated group, the World Academy of Arts and Sciences, to showcase how technology is supporting what we call human securities or human rights.
Examples include
food security, access to food, environmental security, so sustainability, mobility is a category we actually added. Political security is another one.
Show organizers expect increased focus on the metaverse, a shared digital reality connecting users, and on Web3, or Web 3.0, which proponents describe as a third generation of the World Wide Web.
We've actually partnered with CoinDesk,
a new site specializing in Bitcoin and digital currencies,
to build a studio on the show floor to showcase these types of Web3 applications.
From the internet highway to the interstate, automobiles have always had a major presence here, with more than 300 auto industry exhibitors showing off their latest products. Organizers say there's also growth in marine technology, with more and more boat manufacturers moving towards sustainable forms of energy. The battery-operated Waste Shark is an autonomous surface vessel designed to remove algae, biomass, and floating pollution such as plastics from lakes, ponds, and other coastal waterways. Waste Shark will be present at the show with a newer model, the Mega Shark, slated to debut later in the year. Richard Hardiman is CEO and founder of RAN Marine Technology. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
There's a lot of people doing really great stuff out in the ocean and cleaning that up. Our mandate for our company is to clean it before it goes into the ocean and makes it worse. So we're trying to sort of what we call capture that waste at source before it pollutes the ocean.
In digital health, the show will include products for people with visual impairments, such as age-related macular degeneration, also known as AMD. Roland Matern is director of marketing for eSight Eyewear in Toronto, Canada. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
What a person with AMD, as an example, would see is when they're looking at your face, your face wouldn't have any features. It would just be sort of flesh tone.
As seen in the simulation.
Now you put the device on, and just without any manipulation, you might be able to see, oh, there's some eyebrows, or there's a mouth, there's some eyes.
And as the simulation shows, as you zoom in, it literally shrinks away.
So, and that's one of the things that's really important from a facial recognition perspective, because so much of communication is that seeing the reaction.
Representing the best of global technology with nearly one-third of its exhibitors from outside the U.S., CES 2023 will also focus on sustainability with cleaner, more energy-efficient products for the home and workplace. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
That's it for our show now. To all our VOA listeners, you can now find International Edition back on our general website. That's voanews.com. There you will find other great VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voanews.com, and thanks for listening. This has been VOA's International Edition. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our websites for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voaafrica.com and voanews.com. Until next time, have a great weekend. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a recent address to an American Jewish civil society organization, Secretary of State Antony Blinken emphasized the strength of the United States-Israel partnership and underscored that U.S. security assistance to Israel is sacrosanct. That assistance consists not only of providing foreign military financing to Israel and funding for missile defense. It also consists of reinforcing Israel's security through diplomacy, including through support for the deepening diplomatic relations between Israel and its neighbors and with countries around the world. That's why we've worked relentlessly to advance and expand the Abraham Accords and other normalization agreements between Israel and Arab states, said Secretary Blinken. He also pointed to U.S. mediation efforts leading to the historic October Agreement to establish a permanent maritime boundary between Israel and Lebanon, and to the July summit attended by the leaders of India, Israel, the UAE, and the United States, which focused on marshaling the strengths of government, civil society, and the private sector. For all its benefits, however, normalization between Israel and its neighbors is no substitute for building peace between Israelis and Palestinians, Secretary Blinken said. Progress must be made toward the enduring goal of two states living side by side in peace. Any acts that undermine the prospects of a two-state solution must be opposed, including inciting or countenancing violence against civilians, settlement expansion, moves toward annexation of the West Bank, and disruption to the historic status quo at holy sites. The reality, Secretary Blinken said, is that today Palestinians and Israelis do not enjoy equal measures of freedom, security, or opportunity. He noted the Biden-Harris administration has re-engaged with the Palestinian people, including by providing more than $890 million in assistance. We've encouraged the Israeli government to make policy reforms that improve the lives of Palestinians in material ways, Secretary Blinken noted. Additionally, he said, the Palestinian Authority must carry out meaningful reforms, as the frustrations of the Palestinian people are also driven by a lack of governance and corruption. While many people are disillusioned and frustrated by the decades-long attempt to reach a two-state solution for the Israelis and the Palestinians, we cannot give up hope, declared Secretary Blinken. It's precisely when times are difficult that we've simply got to work harder, that we must continue to pursue whatever opening we can to show that progress is still possible.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.